Welcome, everyone, and thank you for joining us for the UFANcast, now powered by BlockU.com and the SB Nation Network. I'm Steven, along with our producer Shane, and we're coming to you as we always do from the Red Zone store in Sandy, Utah. Remember to get all of your Utah Utes merchandise at any of their four locations in Sandy, West Jordan, Salt Lake City, and Layton. Call the Sandy store at 801-523-9173 or go online to uredzone.com. Just Sunday night on the selection show, Utah got into their first NCAA tournament since 2009. Like 2009, Utah was seeded fifth, so in that dreaded 5-12 game, against Stephen F. Austin. Immediately, Seth Davis on CBS called for Utah to be the 12-5 upset, or his, you know, in the preseason. They're playing teams like Arkansas Tech, Texas State, North Texas, Ouachita Baptist. I'm not kidding. Prairie View A&M, Austin Peay, you know?
Let's go Peay.
Let's go Peay, yeah. Mississippi.
Okay.
College.
Oh.
Nobody. They played nobody. They played Northern Iowa, beat them in overtime at home, okay? So a two-point win. Or excuse me, no, they lost. In fact, they lost all three of their decent games. They lost in overtime at home. Then they went on the road to Cincinnati, lost to Xavier. They lost in Waco to Baylor. So all three of the tournament teams that they've played, they've lost. 0-3 against tournament teams. They come from a one-bid league. What am I missing that makes Seth Davis talk about them as a 12-5 upset?
Well, everybody, frankly.
Yeah.
It blew my mind just because when I saw the matchup, I was like, okay, you know, that's a game Utah can win, should win, and they should probably move on to the second round. It was just, I think it's gotten to the point in college basketball to where I don't know if analysts are trying to be too smart and try to outsmart themselves to where, you know, the upset is almost no longer an upset. It's almost expected.
Mm-hmm.
To where there's been so many things that have happened, everything except a 16-1, which I think will happen at some point.
It's got to at some point.
Yeah.
Yeah. Especially with these play-in games.
Exactly. I mean, at some point, it's going to happen. So I think they're just trying to outsmart themselves, and they keep saying, you know, Stephen F. Austin, you know, they have tournament experience. I mean, yeah, they won a game last year. If that's experience.
And they beat VCU. They didn't beat Kentucky. They didn't beat Arizona. They didn't beat, you know, Virginia, North Carolina, Duke. They beat VCU.
It's an interesting thing just because I think they're trying to pick the upset before any upset happens. Thus, does that make it an upset at that point? I mean, Utah's the higher-rated seed by 7 spots, and they're almost a de facto underdog at this point.
To the Southland Conference champion.
It's an interesting thing. I mean, if this game would have been thrown up there and everybody says, yeah, Utah wins that game by 20 points, you know, blah, 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 then I'd really start to have some trepidation in the whole 5-12 thing. But now Coach K has a whole bunch of billboard material to be throwing at guys for the next, you know, 72 hours. These guys aren't going to overlook these kids from the Southland Conference. I mean, they're going to go in there saying, you guys are supposed to beat us? No. And so I think that does Utah a ton of favors. So if I'm Larry Kraskowiak, if this game goes kind of according of how I envision, and it might not, you know, it's a one-game tournament that anything can happen.
Anything can happen.
But, you know, if the game goes how I envision it, Coach K should send, you know, flowers to all these analysts and, you know, treats and gifts saying thank you for giving my team some motivation going into, you know, an NCAA tournament game, although they shouldn't require that, but... When you're going up against a Sam Houston State or Stephen F. Austin, I completely forgot who they were for a second. I mean, every little bit helps. Not only that, but when the Stephen F. Austin, one of their Twitter pages posted, oh, hey, the Sweet 16 goes through Houston. I'm not looking too far ahead.
I saw that one.
At some point, I mean, everybody's thinking like they're an arrived program, like they're a VCU, for example, yeah, okay, or a Wichita State, or, you know, somebody that's made one of these
Gonzaga
runs.
Even.
I'll give you Gonzaga. It's just one of those things that's...
Well, I mean, Gonzaga, by definition, is a mid-major.
Sure.
But like you say, they've at least proven themselves year after year after year.
Yeah, it's a head-scratcher. Like, yeah, they can win, but... For everybody just to say, you know, this is the upset, pump the brakes a little bit.
A little bit. Yeah, well, okay. So their leading scorer, Demetrius Walkup, is a 6'4 guard. 6'4 guard forward, okay?
Mm-hmm.
Reminds me a lot of the guards from, the guard forwards from Wichita State.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? Another mid-major program. Good one, but very, very good.
Sure, absolutely.
Okay? This Walkup is, I mean, he reminds me exactly of the Wichita players. And then there's, trying to think who their other leading scorer is, Jacob Parker.
Yeah.
Who, Jacob Parker is a 6'6 forward, okay? If you look at their roster, they're fairly loaded with what we would call wings, right? So guys in the 6'5 to 6'6 category. Okay, where they also have a number, they have about three guards who run 6 foot and shorter, right? And honestly, if there was one question that I'd like to ask Larry Kraskowiak is, how will Brandon Taylor deal finally guarding a player his size?
Yeah.
You know? Finally matching up with somebody. He hasn't seen a guard his size since the Pac-12 place began, right?
Yeah. Well, I mean, outside of...
Even T.J. McConnell's 6'3".
Well, and Joseph Young, he's probably about that same size.
About 6'3".
That's essentially what Utah's playing this Thursday is a whole bunch of Joseph Youngs, although I don't think they could fill it up as well as Joseph Young can.
Well, and let's be honest, they're not as athletic. I mean, we're talking about a lot of 6'4", 6'5", white guys.
Yeah, I mean, it's an interesting matchup just due to the fact that everybody expects them to win. Which I just have a hard time articulating. It's interesting. I mean, what Utah's going to see on Thursday, and Bill Riley had their head coach on a show. No, it wasn't Bill Riley. Somebody had the coach on the show today. I can't remember who. Bill?
Yeah, I listened to shows.
Yeah, and they were asked about, you know, style play, this, that, and the other. They're going to be not unlike an Oregon-type team in terms of they're going to try to get up and down the floor. They score points. They're going to pressure you a little bit. But, yeah, as you said, they're going to be less athletic. They're going to have a couple of guys that can put the ball in the hole, namely their two leading scorers, which are about 14 to 15 points a game. The rest of the team is rather balanced, about 6 to 8 points a game. Utah's just got to take care of the ball because these guys thrive off turnovers. As long as Utah takes care of the ball, they'll be fine. And then the only time that Utah's really struggled this year is when Utah's gotten beat on the boards, namely the offensive boards. You think of Arizona when they get two or three opportunities at the ball. Oregon, a couple of games in the Pac-12 tournament, you know, when teams can get multiple opportunities to score, then Utah has trouble. I mean, any team would have trouble, but that's when Utah really struggles, is when a team just starts crashing the boards. This team's not going to be able to crash the boards on Utah. Utah does very well holding a team to missing their first shot. Sometimes they have a hard time cleaning up the defensive glass.
Yeah.
If Utah cleans up the defensive glass, I like Utah a lot. And then Brandon Taylor, if he can carry over the performance that he had against Oregon in any way, shape, or form, not only that, you have the All-American in DeLon Wright, you have Jakob Poeltl, Jordan Loveridge. There's just so many pieces there that I just don't know how they lose this game.
Yeah, well, the only, again, looking at the Stephen F. Austin schedule, the only decent win on their schedule is at Memphis. So they went to Memphis, Tennessee, and beat Memphis.
How was Memphis this year, though?
They're not a tournament team, are they?
Okay.
Yeah, so they're not a tournament team. I mean, but Memphis is at least
a... And they're dreaded American.
Yeah, but Memphis is at least a respected program,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, uh-huh.
So they played four respected programs, and they lost three out of four. And of the only three tournament teams they played, they lost all three. So again, just not, I'm just not seeing it. If you look at the roster, okay, again, we go 6'4", 6'5". They only have two players over 6'6". One player over 6'7". And that player is only 6'9". I mean, the one thing that scares me is that every game this season where I have said Utah should dominate inside, like against Wichita State, they have not. In fact, smaller teams have been either, I wouldn't say that they have dominated, because they actually beat Wichita State on the boards, but not by as much as a 7'1" player should give you, right? Yeah. So the only thing that gives me pause is this idea that, one, they haven't been rebounding very well lately. Two, they've had a hard time keeping these smaller guys off the glass. And like you say, they have a really hard time cleaning up those long caroms and so forth. Mm-hmm. But if you look at the roster, honestly, if Tanner Clayton plays, and he's the only player who is even remotely in Brakot Chapman's, you know, league, let alone Jakob Poeltl or Dallin Bashinsky, right? I mean, we could even go, if we need to, we could even go with Olsen and still be bigger, yeah. Right? I mean, we should absolutely dominate with our size in the down low. And wow, I mean, Reyes is what, 6'8" himself, 6'7", 6'8",
yeah,
right?
Dude. Yeah.
So we should dominate the paint.
Well, and I want to say that their coach, the way they like to play is they like to, you know, get in your face a little bit, you know, kind of like a press man-to-man type defense that they like to play. If they play that against Utah?
Yeah. See, that's the thing. The teams that have given Utah troubles have been zone teams.
Yeah.
Not press man teams. If they pressure us, I mean, first of all, DeLon Wright will eat them for lunch.
Yeah.
Secondly, our motion and our size, I mean, they can't take Poeltl one-on-one.
No, and just when Utah's locked into that motion offense against a man defense, just the way that they move the ball and the way they penetrate and the way they kick, and then, you know, if they play man-to-man, Utah runs away with it. I don't think there's any chance. If they go zone, then they give themselves a much better chance. But at the same time, Utah shoots 40-plus percent from the three-point line. Mm-hmm. So I won't just, we kind of keep going back to it. I don't see it. I just don't. Not this game, not this matchup. Now, if they get it off from the three, just like how most upsets happen.
They shoot 386.
So they shoot pretty good.
Yeah. But again, it's hard to know how good they really are. Utah shoots, I mean, still at this point, still shoots 40%.
Well, and Utah also was one of the leaders in the Pac-12 in three-point defense. So it's just one of those things to where if they get hot from three, just like any upset in the NCAA tournament, then that's the recipe right there. They have to get hot from three and get hot from the outside. I'm trying to think of a team that really burnt Utah from deep this year.
I don't remember any team that really lit Utah.
No, I mean, obviously, everybody can think of the Joseph Young buzzer beater this last game, but I don't think they shot a very good percentage. So if they got to rely on jump shots, mm-hmm. I really like Utah's chances in this first round game.
Well, again, they averaged the same, roughly the same number of rebounds. You know, Stephen F. Austin with 34.8, Utah with 34.9. Utah shoots a better three-point percentage. They're roughly equal overall field goal percentage. They shoot better from the free throw line. So, you know, hopefully Utah doesn't, because they're nearly 80% as a team.
I wonder what would happen if you pulled Poeltl's percentage out.
Oh, it goes way up.
Yeah.
I mean, it goes way up.
Which he's been shooting better of late.
I think he's kind of starting to get a little bit, you know, of the idea, if you will. But the one thing I look at this and I go, okay, they shoot 38%, 38.6% from the three-point line. Against whom? Okay? They lost by 18 to Xavier. Okay? They lose by what? 16 to Baylor. And they lose in overtime at home to UNI. So the only team of the three tournament teams that they had a chance in, they lost at home. At home.
Yeah.
So, it'll be interesting to really see what happens on Thursday, because, folks, neither one of us are seeing it.
Again, it can happen. It's the NCAA tournament.
Sure.
But for everybody to pick it, I don't get it.
That's it. I mean, everybody is so sure that this is the 12-5 upset. What do they see? I'll tell you what ESPN came up with. Let me see if I can.
The funny thing is, as you look that up, the computers, like, I saw something on Twitter today where there's like the computers versus like the pundits type thing.
Uh-huh.
Like, the computers have Utah winning like 80% of the time, but more the pundits are picking the little school from Texas.
Stephen
F. Austin. So it's
just think, it's, you know, Stone Cold Stephen F. Austin.
Locked that one in there.
Yeah. So here's ESPN's write up. Okay, Thomas Walkup and company treated 2014 single digit matchup. This is last year, in the same manner as its namesake treated Mr. McMahon's red Corvette disrespectfully. Last March's electrifying stunner of VCU was hardly the end of Stephen F. Austin's story. The Lumberjacks, who have lost exactly one game since November 24th, are back and even better in 2014-15, combining one of the country's peskiest pressure defenses with one of the most efficient offenses. You know, that sounds a lot like Utah, except for one problem. Utah is bigger, stronger, faster across every position.
And Utah's played bigger, faster, stronger competition.
Yes.
Have been tested against it.
Yes. I mean, the Utah stats are against UCLA, not Texas A&M Corpus Christi. Utah stats are against Arizona, not Arkansas State, right? Not Lamar or Sam Houston State. Abilene Christian. I mean, these are some schools you've never even heard of are Incarnate Word.
Word.
Exactly. Houston Baptist.
Let me see if I can. So we get odds sent out. Yeah, here it is. Odds from the Bovada in Vegas.
Uh-huh.
Utah is still 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9. They're 10th in odds to win the NCAA championship at 33-1. They're ahead of Kansas, who's at 40-1. Of course, Kansas is on the same side of the bracket as Kentucky.
Yeah. And Utah is not, which, you know, if nothing else, I mean, even fans who don't like the 12-5 matchup have got to be happy the fact that they're not on the same side with Kentucky.
I know. Everybody in Utah Nation was just like, just show us in the game. Just show Kentucky, then show us the next game, so then we just know what's going to happen. It didn't. It was amazing.
Isn't Oregon actually just below Kentucky, if I recall correctly? So
possibly. I'd have to look the bracket. Odds to win the South region. Utah's fourth with a 7-1 odds behind Duke, Gonzaga, and Iowa State. Utah's the 5 seed. They have better odds than Georgetown at 12-1. And this is from Vegas people. This isn't from people who have rooting interests one way or the other. They just want to make money. They have Stephen F. Austin at 50-1.
I'm not sure about the first round matchup. Something about Stephen F. Austin, you know, must be escaping us here, because everything we look at, and honestly, if you look at BlockU.com in the next few days, we're going to have some statistical comparisons. We're gonna dig into this. We're going to talk to the Southland expert in the next couple of days, and we're going to have a Q&A with them. maybe we can find out what we're missing here, and if you stick with us, maybe you'll find out what the mystery is too. The little team from Eastern Texas. But the
beautiful Eastern Texas.
Beautiful Eastern
Texas. That's what the coach said on the radio today. If you throw beautiful in Texas in any word, in the same sentence at the same time, that there's something wrong.
Hey, I like Dallas. Dallas is nice. And if you haven't been to San Antonio, the Riverwalk is beautiful.
I've been through Dallas. I was just happy to get out there alive.
Well, in any case, the first round matchup, honestly, I see Utah winning.
Yeah.
I in fact, if the teams, the other tournament teams that they faced, I think that Utah would be comparable to a Xavier. I would think they would be comparable to a Baylor. And honestly, I've seen Baylor play, and I think Utah's better. And they lost, you know, by big double digits, 16 and 18 points to each team. I see Utah, you know, possibly, I see it a double digit win. I really do. What I cannot handle, I will just flat out say this, is if they start out slow again. And the one thing in the last eight games, Utah is 4-4. With loss, two losses to Oregon, one loss to Arizona, and, of course, an inexplicable loss to Washington. You know, two good teams, a really, really bad loss.
You know, on the season, they only had one bad loss. I mean, I think any Utah fan would have taken that at the beginning of the season.
But it was the one loss that would have kept us – well, I mean, we still would have run into Oregon, but yeah. But still. But the matchup that I'm worried about is the second round matchup.
Mm-hmm.
I said it early in the season. Fans, if you anybody who's listened to our show knows that I said early on, watch out for Georgetown. Georgetown's going to wreck some brackets. And I still believe that. Unfortunately, Utah is probably the team that runs into them. So it's either a matter of Utah advancing to the Sweet 16 or Georgetown, again, wrecking some brackets here, because I really think that's a very good team, and that's the team that Utah's really – I see Georgetown as a UCLA with better coaching.
That's I think my junior Jazz team might have better coaching. the problem with Georgetown, I definitely hear what you're saying, no doubt about that. There's a couple problems. One is kind of in a similar manner. A lot of pundits are picking Georgetown to lose in the opening round game. A lot of people are expecting a 12-13 matchup in the second round of the NCAA tournament with those two. But something to kind of keep in mind just a little bit is Georgetown has to travel to Portland. And Eastern Washington is taking basically a bus trip up the road.
Mm-hmm.
So there's probably – it's going to be a road game for Georgetown. So that's probably something to keep in mind. I expect them to win. I picked them in my bracket. I expect them to win, but – that's not an Georgetown should be pissed that they have to travel to Portland and basically play a de facto road game as a four seed.
Well, think about Utah having to travel all the way to what was it, Miami or Orlando? I can't remember where in 2009, somewhere in Florida, and then take on, you know, Arizona. Remember
yeah, that would suck for both of us, though.
Yeah, but that was terrible for a five seed.
Yeah.
Especially for a conference champion. Remember, Utah won the Mountain West Conference that year.
Yeah,
and you know what's weird is that here's another case against Stephen F. Austin. I was thinking about this on the drive over. That in 2009, when Utah last made the tournament, they ran into a buzzsaw in an athletic.
Mm-hmm.
You know the history of Arizona: sickly athletic,
whoa,
long. And the only team in that first round, 12-5, any of those brackets, that could have matched up with Utah with Luke Neville. Okay?
Well, that was when that popped up on the screen. I think a lot of people were like, wait, hold on a second. Like, that's not a 12 seed.
Yeah, but do you remember where the other 12 seed was? Other 12-5 possible matchup? Could have gone to Boise. Instead, we had to go to Florida.
But I just remember when they said Arizona, I was like, this should almost be a flip to the seeds. Like, if anything, Arizona's more of a five seed than Utah was that year.
Well, they turned out, I mean, they had Chase Budinger. And like I say, honestly, they were undersized as far as a Power 5 team. But those undersized guys were, like, again, 6'7", you know, Chase Budinger.
I think they made the Sweet 16 that year, too.
I believe they did. Yeah. And, well, and they had Jordan Hill.
Mm-hmm.
Who is still playing for the Lakers today.
So is Budinger. Mm-hmm. He's playing for, I think, still playing for Minnesota or Houston or somebody.
Yeah, I mean, he's still in the league.
Yeah.
And what's amazing is Luke Neville is not.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't think he even got drafted.
No, he saw some summer camp time, but that was about it.
Yeah. I mean, a 7'2" center, you know, in the NBA who was.
But I also heard somewhere that He wasn't too heartbroken about not. I think he really wanted to go home. I swear I heard that. You know, he might have been able to stick around in the NBA if he tried, but he was pretty happy to go home.
Well, that would make sense. But the point I'm trying to make is that this 5-12 matchup is not that Arizona team.
Yeah.
They do not have that Jordan Hill who can match up with Jakob Poeltl. They don't. They just don't have him. Okay, I mean, Jordan Hill was, what, 6'10", 6'11", and freakishly athletic and could shoot three-pointers,
mm-hmm.
okay? He was just a man under the boards and outside and inside. He was the only guy in that sort of pod of 5'12s that could have matched up with Luke Neville. And this Stephen F. Austin team is not that. They do not have a Chase Buttinger. If I recall correctly, they had some good guards at that time, too.
They always have a good, scrappy guard.
Yeah. This is not that team. They cannot match up with Utah inside. They don't have the the coach said today that they run 10 players double-digit minutes. I don't see them having the talent 1 through 10 that Utah does. I don't think that, you know, once it gets into the – I mean, once they sub out their starters, I think – I mean, remember that against – who was it? Washington State? I can't remember. Stanford, maybe. Stanford's a talented team, right?
Yeah.
But once Stanford – I mean, Stanford's got good players 1 through 5. Once they subbed out, Utah's bench outscored Stanford's bench 33-5. That may be, in fact, the biggest advantage that Utah has over Stephen F. Austin. They may even have 2 or 3 really good players. And in the NCAA tournament, as you say, I mean, look at Danny and the Miracles. It only takes really one outstanding player.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
But what do they have after the 1 or 2 that they've got? What do they have after that? What if that guy leaves the game? Does he have to play 40 minutes? You know?
Well, and
Parker and
yeah. Well, and I kind of wonder what, I mean, Tommy Connor, I mean, he's the de facto defensive coordinator
right.
for the basketball team.
Mm-hmm.
If he sees anything, he won't be scared to throw out an odd defense out there just to throw somebody off. He won't care. So
sure.
I think that's a little bit of a wild card out there. What does Tommy Connor see on film to really disrupt these guys? Because the numbers say they're a good offensive team. Obviously, their competition leads to questions.
They've got two players. Here's the thing. They've got two players, Thomas Walkup and Jakob Parker, who average 29.8 points per game of the 79 points as they score. Okay? What happens, as Utah is wont to do, if Utah takes those two players out?
Yeah.
Do they have a third scorer? I mean, they've got three guys averaging 8 points. Decent. Can that guy score 15? Can he score 18? Can he score 20? Doesn't look like it. And against Sam Houston State.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Yeah.
If Utah takes out Jakob Parker, Thomas Walkup, what does Stephen F. Austin have? Because we know that if DeLon Wright doesn't score 20 points, Taylor can score 24. That Dakari Tucker has led this team in scoring.
And he's been
Kyle
quiet.
Kuzma,
he's due.
He is. Kyle Kuzma has led this team. Brakot Chapman has led this team in scoring. Chris Reyes, I believe. Jordan Loveridge has led this team several times.
Mm-hmm.
Jakob Poeltl can lead this team in scoring.
Mm-hmm.
What does... You know, okay, let's just flat out give Stephen F. Austin their due, okay? If Walkup and Parker are solid players, if, like you say, Tommy Connor schemes to take them out of the game and they can, what else they got? What else you got?
That's the NCAA tournament.
Yes, it is. All right, so we'll see how that plays out this Thursday. So that will wrap it up here at
Real
the
quick.
Red Zone. Oh, yeah, go ahead.
Since we only have the one show, but there could potentially be two games this week,
mm-hmm.
Does Utah make the second weekend?
Oh, so our prediction?
Yeah.
Do they make the Sweet 16?
Yeah.
Guess
do
question.
They make the Sweet 16?
I will say this. I will say if they meet Georgetown, they go home. If they meet that 13 seed, then if it's Eastern Washington, I think they move on.
Okay. Does Utah make the Sweet 16?
I just said.
No. Are we talking about a Utah game next week?
Okay, you're gonna nail me down.
I'm saying Utah to the Sweet 16.
I honestly, that's my prediction. It's if they meet Georgetown, no.
If they meet Eastern Washington, pick that game, the Georgetown Eastern Washington game.
I say Georgetown.
Okay, then we're not talking about Utah next week.
Okay, yet. Yeah, that's my prediction. I believe that Georgetown is a sleeper team. I've seen them play. I've seen them play a very good schedule, and they are a dangerous team. Mm-hmm. That is a dangerous team. If you look at their 10 losses, they're probably all to top 25 teams. I mean, that is a dangerous team. It's an underrated team, under the radar team, I think.
Yeah, hard to be underrated at 4 seed, though.
Maybe so, but I think they're better than that. I really do. We'll see. I hope you're right. One of us is going to be.
Yeah. I could be way off. I just think if Utah gets rolling against Stephen F. Austin, I think that kind of carries over. And if they're playing Georgetown, mm-hmm. who's 2,000 miles away from home, I think that's a big advantage.
No, I agree with that.
Utah can go home Thursday. That's the thing. It's the NCAA.
But let's nail down the first round.
Mm-hmm.
Does Utah make it out of the first round?
Yes.
I agree. We've spent this whole show belaboring the point, but I don't see Stephen F. Austin. I just don't. There's the depth and height and athletic ability and who they played, who they beaten, right? None of it screams upset. None of it. I don't see what's. I think Seth Davis has been smoking something.
Hopefully he shares.
All right, folks.
We're going to be in Portland, after all.
Yes, we are. Oh, and before we wrap it up, just to say, if you are listening to this show and you want to participate in the BlockU.com bracket challenge, go over to BlockU and put your brackets in for some bragging rights over on our blog site. So that will wrap it up here at the Red Zone for the UFANcast and BlockU.com. As always, a big thank you to all of our fans and listeners. Remember to follow us on Twitter, like us on Facebook, check out our YouTube and Ustream channels, and visit BlockU.com, as we just mentioned. Plenty of information this week. We'll be digging deep into Stephen F. Austin and finding out as much as we can. Join us next time when we bring you more of the best of Utah sports.